Welcome to The Grow Show, powered by Steel. The Grow Show is brought to you by Marty Grinder's Grow Group, where we specialize in teaching landscaping companies how to clarify their platform, grow their people, build their processes, and realize profits. Everything we teach is grounded in real experience. Our team is actively involved in the day-to-day operations of Southwest Ohio's Grinder Landscaping Company. New episodes of The Grow Show are released weekly on Wednesdays. Remember to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Now, here's your host, Marty Grinder.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever the case may be. This is Marty Grinder from Grinder Landscaping Company and The Grow Group. Thanks for downloading The Grow Show, powered by Steel. Today, we're going to be talking to and learning from Keith Bowman from McHale Landscaping. But first, a reminder, you can get the latest edition of The Grow Show delivered to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts or watch us on YouTube for an enhanced learning experience. The Grow Show is the greatest thing since the NALP Grow Group field trip. We've traveled all over the U.S. for these folks in the past 8 years, and each one is a tremendous learning experience for you and your team. Nothing beats experiential learning with your team. I see better than I hear, folks, and I'm willing to bet you do too. We put our heart and soul into everything we do, so sign up for the field trip. The link is attached, and now let's learn a lot more about the field trip from our host from McHale Landscaping is Keith Bowman. Keith, welcome to The Grow Show. How are you?
Thanks for having me, and hope you're doing well. Glad to be here.
Super excited to come out there and see your operation. I've been a distant fan for years. I've read about McHale Landscaping for probably 30 years, to be honest with you, probably longer than that. Mm-hmm. Heavily decorated company, does tremendous design build work. Could you be so kind as to tell us a little bit about yourself, first of all, and then give us a little bit of history of McHale, who started it, how'd you get to where you are today? Just have us understand what's going on out there.
Okay. Thanks, Marty. My name's Keith Bowman. My title is a president of horticultural services and business development. I've been with McHale since February 10th of 2003. I came and started as a foreman right out of college. Love McHale it. Was founded in 1981 by two brothers, Kevin and Steve McHale. Kevin has served as our president and kind of the person who steers the ship, for lack of a better term, for our history. And his brother, Steve, is our lead designer, our landscape architect, and kind of the work that he has done and trained our people to do over the years, especially on the design build side, has created our brand and is the backbone of our company. So we were only design build for the first, 17 to 20 years of the history of our company. And then we parlayed that into maintenance, but the backbone of our company is started in design build.
So how many locations do you have now? Give us a feel for the number of team members, the trucks. I know that you're known for design build, but there's probably a lot of people on here that would like to learn a lot more. Just share us whatever you can to help us get to understand McHale better.
So we float around 375 employees, which is crazy to me to think.
It is.
Coming,
yes.
have 40 employees when I started 22 years ago. Our main operation where we're going to be having the field trip is in Upper Marlboro, Maryland, which is, if you look at the Washington, D.C. Beltway, it's like 4 o'clock on the Beltway, if you look at it like a clock. So that's our main yard. There's about, I'm guessing here, educated guess, we have about 130 trucks come out of that facility. It's about an 8-acre facility. We have another yard in Clarksburg, Maryland, with it, which is Montgomery County, northwest of Washington, D.C., about a 5-acre facility there. We have a very small yard in Pasadena, Maryland, which is 2 trucks roll out of. We have a yard in Easton, Maryland, across the Bay Bridge that we started in 2008 that about 10 crews roll out of there every day. And then we have a few things that are unique. We have 2 design studios. I know other companies do that, but one in Annapolis, Maryland, and one in McLean, Virginia. And these are dedicated to our design staff only, design sales staff only. And then what really makes us unique is we have a 45 to 50 acre farm in Prince George's County where we don't grow material, but we kind of buy it and corner the market for certain plant materials that are favorable to our region. Right. And our designers use that to use as their plant palette.
Well, I'm a plant geek. So tell us a couple of your favorite plants. When you say you've got some unique plants out there, what would we see if we were out there? I know we're not going to go out there, but just tell me a little bit about the plants.
Well, we will have pictures of the farm. But we have like your, I'm not going to say basic, but we have your foundation plantings that you need on every job. Your Green Mountain boxwoods, your Green Velvet boxwoods. We have a lot of green giant arborvitaes. We have a lot
probably some Taxus densiformis and things like that. Yep.
We have a lot of crepe myrtles. No perennials, with just shrubs and trees. We have a lot of deciduous trees, maples, pin oaks, just a crazy amount of plant material out there. We have a whole staff devoted to taking care of it.
So $46 million worth of residential design build work. Incredible. I guess, what's your competitive advantage? Tell us a little bit about why people pick McHale over other options in the marketplace.
I believe our competitive advantage is our people and just empowering people. Like, I look at my career, like many people in the landscape industry have that entrepreneurial itch, which I had myself too. Many people at McHale had that itch, but the McHales and our executive team have given people the ability to kind of go out and make mistakes. And we've all learned from mistakes, and they've been there to back us up. And it shows with the client, like, we make a mistake, we're going to own up to it. And it, you know, that leads to referrals, that leads to, you know, more work with the client base, and one hand played off the other. Like I told you earlier, Marty, we started in design build and it's parlayed into maintenance. And now the company's like 50-50. So it is a big undertaking, but we like to market ourselves, all the employees at McHale, as single source. So Keith Bowman goes out and represents McHale Landscape Design. He's going to make a relationship with Mrs. Smith. And I have this in my career where I've worked for certain clients for my whole 23-year career. And that leads to, you know, maintaining their property or doing phase two or doing a redesign. And then another important thing for us is we're very versatile. So we have horticulturalists. We have landscape professionals, you know, guys that do the grading and the groundwork and the stonework. We have masons, we have carpenters, and then we have the designers to kind of rouse all together, and we can build what they imagine.
Keith, as I'm listening to you, is it fair to say that one of your secrets to your success is that all of the people that represent your company and sell work almost kind of have a little business within the business? Is that...
Exactly. If you look at McHale, McHale's a bunch of little businesses stacked up on top of each other.
Right.
So our design salespeople, they have a team, and their objective is to, you know, on the design side, to design it, to go out and show the client their vision and sell it, and then produce it. So
I think for everyone, no, go ahead.
It's not just kind of a lot of companies separate design, sales, and operations.
Right.
We kind of have it married together.
Right. And I think when we think about it, I know myself, I'm trying to find a little handyman for my house. You can't find anybody. Mm-hmm. I have a Toyota pickup truck. The Toyota dealership, Keith, around the corner, it's literally 2 miles from our shop. We don't even want to go there anymore. That's how bad they are. And bad service is everywhere. And I see people, they scoff, oh, it's a big company, I wouldn't get service. But I know you get service out of McHale because I know you don't grow. How are you finding $46 million worth of work? Is it a lot of referrals? Is it networking? Is it outreach? Is there something from a marketing perspective that you're, you know, half of it is maintenance, which is great, but you still got to climb up the hill for $25 million worth of DB work every year. Mm-hmm. How are you doing that?
And maintenance would not be as big as it is if it wasn't for, you know, built off the tails of DB. So
yes, right.
I think you make a great point, right? So what we kind of tell our people is, customer service doesn't add overhead. If you want to build up your team's customer service, you're not adding a truck payment. You're not adding.
I got to interrupt you here. You got to listen to that again. Customer service is not overhead, ladies and gentlemen that are listening to us today on the Grow Show powered by Steel. That is great. Carry on. Love it.
Yeah, so, you know, our philosophy is a really high level of customer service, right? So you're frustrated by the Toyota dealership, right?
Right.
Our clients will get frustrated with us sometimes, you know, the pace of business or whatever, but we want to own our problems. We want to, we want people to have a direct line to their account representative or salesperson's cell phone. It's the product is important, and we do a really good job with, I mean, our projects are amazing, but
we're showing pictures of some of them right now that we've bled in here. If you're watching us on YouTube, and I could look at your website all day long. It's like looking at a, Botanical Garden. I mean, tremendous projects. Mind-boggling.
We really appreciate that. But on top of that, you know, the great work and be able to do the complicated projects, we're firm believers that our high level of customer service gets us referrals. Because especially when you're dealing with clients of, you know, high wealth or high pressure jobs, they're measuring value as opposed to dollars. So we actually have clients that'll call us and say, hey, I need to get my driveway sealed, or can you find someone to get my windows cleaned? Or it just, we want to build that relationship, and we don't want to do everything and be everything for everyone, but it kind of goes that way.
And then do you get their driveway sealed and get their windows cleaned, or you have referrals, you have a concierge service? Tell me how you're doing that.
It depends on the client. It depends on the client. You know, some clients we will, you know, we'll find someone and we'll subcontract it out, but other clients, you know, that it just depends on the situation. We'll say, you know, call Tom down the street. He seals driveways, or just, we want to be the first call.
But that's what, you know, I remember years ago, Keith, and I'm a lot older than you, but one of the things that was ingrained in me when I learned service from studying other companies and read books was, you don't have to be able to do the work, but you should be able to give your client an answer, or you should be able to help them, or you should at least be able to show them by your actions that you care. To just say, nope, we don't do that, they might run into a landscaper that does do that, or they might run into a landscaper that wants to go to the trouble to find him someone. So I think you're absolutely right about that.
You should also be able to say, you know, I don't have an answer to that right now, but I'm going to follow up with you. I'll get you an answer.
But yes, exactly.
You're exactly right. And, you know, business 101 says you don't want to do too many things. You know, you don't want to take it away from what you're good at. If you're good at planting flowers, you want to do that all the time where your margins are, but you also want to retain your client. You know, going out to find new customers can be expensive. You know, it's like, you know, people in marketing look at marketing as an investment, but oftentimes people in accounting look at marketing as an expense. It depends on, you know, how you get your client. So if you look at our advertising, we do a lot of, advertising in high end publications, and we use our awards to kind of drive our marketing.
Right.
A lot of our marketing is driven by our employees' network.
Okay.
Network of clients or network of other professionals.
And are you making them get involved in the arts? Are you getting them involved in the Humane Society things? What do you, when you say it's their network, like what are you asking from your team to do to help with that?
Well, we encourage our people that are client facing to interface with arborists, or irrigation companies, or architects, or people who need work.
I see.
Yep. But also, we do some charity work. We'll give some free designs away. Not free. We'll let someone auction off a design at a school fundraiser or something like that.
Right.
And it, you know, kind of plays off each other. Engineers is a good lead source for us.
No, you're preaching to the choir here, because one of the things we teach here is this prospect, this concept that every salesperson, every day they prospect, every day they nurture, every day they close, every day they look for two kinds of people, people that could do business with you. But Keith, I have found what is just as important as finding people that can do business with you is finding people that know people that can do business with you. You might find a mortgage banker in Maryland that has unbelievable contacts for new senators or new politicians or a new company coming to the DC Beltway, and they need somebody they can count on. And that, again, it gets back to what you and I were just talking about, that if a mortgage broker, okay, they don't do landscaping, but if they refer Mikhail and Mikhail always comes through and it makes them look good, everybody listening to and watching the Grow Show today knows how that feels when you want to refer someone that you know is going to make you look good, right?
Yeah. You're speaking my language. You never know. Yeah.
You never
know the person that you're meeting with if they're the network that they have, if they're a connector, if you go out and do a good job for them, if they're gonna refer people to you. It's a very important thing, and it's hard to train people. You have to experience it. You have to experience the network.
And that makes me think of the next question that I want to ask you. So you're not gonna do this if you don't have good people. So finding and keeping people, you know, we have 250 companies in our peer groups now, Keith. It's the topic of discussion at every meeting. And it's a little strange to me, because I've been doing this 41 years. And for the first, I'd say 15 years of my business, it was never, the challenge was not finding people to do the work. I always had a great pipeline. The challenge was finding people who want us to work for them. Now it's kind of, you know, with COVID, it certainly was not finding the work. We had more work than we knew what to do with. It was a blessing for our industry, but finding people continues to be a challenge. I am trying to remove from my thoughts and my comments that people don't want to work today, because to me, in some ways, Keith, that's a little irrelevant saying that, because we're going to find the cream of the crop no matter what. We got to keep trying. So my question to you, without giving away maybe one of your proprietary secrets, what are you doing to find and keep people, and how are you pulling all this off? Because 375 people on a team, I mean, that's a lot of people to secure. Are you using the H2B program? Are you, is, you know, what are you doing to find and keep people?
So I'm with you. It's a concern. It's a concern for us too. So I will say one thing that's really, really helped us is Mikhail's a true family business. So we have the two founders that work for us, that lead us. And then we have, six of their children that are in the business.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome. But, I did not realize that.
But on top of that, which is, I love this statistic. We have 37 families that have two or more employees at the company that count on our company.
I love it. And why is that a good thing? What has that done for you?
I think that's the largest compliment our company can have. And it's, to me, it shows kind of what the Mikhail family and the management team has done to support our employees. So that's been a huge, huge thing for us. And then another thing that I find is important to keep and retain employees is doing your best to have a defined career path for them. Now, it's hard. It's really hard to do that, especially when you're smaller. Even now at our size, it's hard because you don't know what the economy is going to do. You don't know when it's time to build another team.
And you say, when you say it's hard because you're somewhat implying promises that we got to, I see what you're saying. Go on.
So, you know, when I'm discussing that with someone that's right out of school, like I was, or, you know, new to the field, I ask them to, you know, figure out who they are first. Are you a front of the house person or a back of the house person? Are you a waiter or maitre d' or waitress, or are you a chef or dishwasher?
Right.
Both make the restaurant work, but you're going to help us figure out the best spot for you when you get to know yourself and what you really like about the landscape industry. When the employee decides that and they say, "Hey, Keith, I really don't want to be, you know, interfacing with a client, you know, every day, like I see some of these account managers do, or these design salespeople do," then they go to the project management side. And the other side is, you know, you're an account manager, assistant account manager, and you work up to account manager, you're a design assistant, and you work up to lead designer and senior designer. And there's all these steps, but I'm a firm believer that managing to metrics is bad, but it, plain and simple, there's dollars and cents behind this, and our growth, you know, with every business, you're kind of like feeding the beast to keep the good employees. So it's a great thing, but you have, it's kind of like with what the Mikhails did with me. It's just like, I thought I'd be here 2 years, but they enabled me to kind of scratch that itch and be an entrepreneur and in my mind. And it's just, that's the employees that have stayed with us right out of college. We've given them like a, here's where we want you in 3 years. Here's where we want you in 7 years. Here's where we see you in 10 years.
Yeah.
That's been very, very important for
us. How involved are you in that process? Is that something, is an intimate part of your responsibilities, that path and the design and the implementation of it?
Yeah. I had clients for a long time. And then in 2018, we bought a few other businesses, other landscape companies. So I went into kind of the M&A integration. And through that process, I kind of shed my clients and gave them to somebody else that it was time for them to grow. And a large part of my job now is just, I don't know the right way to put it, mentorship, but, you know, guidance, management.
Yeah. Well, and you know what you're making me think, and I know enough, you know, before we met, I've heard great things about you and what you've done there. The questions I always like to ask my clients, you know, and I often ask them that in a private, intimate setting, and they'll say, "Well, what do you mean?" And I'll say, "Well, like, tell me about a bad day you've had in the last month. Did you yell at someone?" "Oh yeah, I got a little irritated with Claire." "What'd Claire do?" "Well, Claire didn't put payroll on my desk. I mean, it's supposed to be on my desk every 2 weeks. I don't know what she's doing. She forgot. Have you ever forgotten something? Yeah. So do you like does Claire do this all the time? No, but I mean, it was just ridiculous. How can she forget that? People are entitled to bad days. And I think sometimes that's just a good perspective to have. And as I listen to you, and that you're part of a family business where 37 different families are, six members of the McHale family, in addition to the two brothers, are there. I think to have an outsider like yourself that's not a McHale that's intimately involved in this is smart, because you have to take the good that comes from a family business, but you also have to watch. I have two of my family members in my business now. My daughter, Emily, who you've interacted with, is my oldest daughter. And mm-hmm. then my son, Grant, just started here in April. And, you know, I'm very cognizant of that. I make sure that I don't want them mistreated. I don't want them treated unfairly. But I do make sure that when they're here, this is an employment relationship. This isn't family. There are some aspects of it that can be family, I get. But I think that question that I always ask myself is like, okay, this week, what I wanted to have worked for me? No, you know what? On Tuesday, what were you doing? And I just think it's a way of trying to stay in place. How do you deal with that family dynamic there? Are there challenges and things that you work with? I mean, obviously, if you got 375 people there, you're growing, you're 46 million, residential design build, half of it being maintenance. I mean, all things I see here points to massive success. How else are you doing that, Keith?
Well, you're right. There are, and the McHale's perspective on kids in the business is exactly your perspective, right? That it's a business relationship. And that's an interesting question, because there have been issues, you know, with a McHale child or someone in the past, but it's not, I don't look at it as that, neither do McHale's. It's just like, hey, they made a mistake. They're an employee. Let's back them up. Let's be there to kind of help them. Is it different because their last name is McHale? Maybe in the beginning it was, that's a long time ago, but now it's like we're one group now.
Mine's the same thing. There's only three Grunders here, but it's the same thing. And that I want it to be that way. Like, I would never want anyone to think, people are going to think that my daughter and my son are here because they're a Grunder. And that is true. Mm-hmm. My son has only been here 2 months. He's already done some really nice things. He's not calling attention to himself by being late for work or not doing what he's supposed to do or so forth. My daughter, Emily's been here almost 7 years.
She's great.
Well, thank you. Her work speaks for itself. So that, you know, that helps a lot too. I think oftentimes, Keith, people are afraid to work with family. And I think if you do it right, it can be done.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, most of the McHale kids, except for two, work on my team. And I consider them peers. We confide on each other, you know, on a day-to-day basis on issues that we're having. And then on top of that, you know, I've referred two of my very close friends to work at McHale.
And
people always
and
that
says it all.
Yeah, don't mix business with pleasure. But it's our, you know, one of our executive team members was a really close college friend of mine, and it's a great company. And I'm sure you feel the same way about your company too.
Well, yeah,
people.
Well, and the other thing I would tell you is that I'm, you know, at age 57, my 41st year in business, I'm a lot better at doing this now than I was when I was 28. You know, if I would have had to bring a family member in or a cousin or something like that. In fact, I did have a cousin that worked here that didn't work. I had to terminate him. So there's those things. I don't think I was mature enough, and I don't think I had the wisdom and the understanding. I had a lot of mentors that, you know, I had one of my mentors, it was actually his son that helped me the most with this. And he said, the way I look at it, because he was from a family business, wildly successful family business, multi-billion dollar a year company. He said, the way I look at it is your last name should get you the interview, but you got to be able to get the job. And I always like that. Like, I think that is what happened. So speaking of team, doing the kind of work you're doing, I know you have a lot that you self-perform, but I also imagine that you're leveraging a lot of subs, other partners in your success. Can you tell us a little bit about who else helps McHale work?
Well, we have, as I told you earlier, we have a very versatile toolbox, right? So we have masons, we have carpenters, but we we do rely on subs. We have preferred subs. We have a couple family-owned businesses that are, they're masons that they help us out. They're actually helping us lay some brick on a project right now. We sub a lot of tree work. It's based on, it's the liability, yeah, and it's hard to find those, right, people. And we, right, sub irrigation and some lighting, but we do a lot of lighting in-house. So we've bounced back and forth about doing irrigation in-house, but it's, as you know, it's hard to find, yeah, people, right, that it have is expertise.
That's the, I think that's the hardest discipline thing to find.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And you want to do it at a high level.
Yeah. So we've subbed things over the years that we have brought in-house. We brought in turf care in-house, which was a great decision for us. We have two really great turf care managers. But we do leverage our subs, and we watch how much subcontracting work we do, because with 375 employees, you have a lot of truck payments to make, and we have a certain percentage of work that we don't want to sub. But it all depends. You know, in 2021, we had a production problem. You know, we, as many landscape companies did coming out of COVID, we had a lot of work to do. And
you probably needed the subs.
We needed some subs.
Yeah, I get it.
This year we're still using subs, but it's not quite as much. But we value those relationships very, very much. And they're like an extension of our company.
Yeah. The companies that we work with in the Grow Group, the ones that struggle the most with profitability, Keith, are the design build firms. There's so much margin for error when you bid a job. The residential has a lot less commonalities about it. We know it's tough. It's tough to manage. It's tough to make it profitable. You're doing both. Can you share with us any key things that, and obviously anyone that wants to be smart and come out to the field trip, you're going to learn a lot more than we can here on a 45-minute podcast, but can you share with us how you're making this all work? Because this is, I mean, we're about 40% of your size, and mm-hmm, and I'm amazed.
So the number one thing, and this is industry-wide, this is how I feel about it and how, you know, Mikhail team feels about it, especially on design build, is protect your pricing, right?
Okay.
How often are you, as a landscape professional, you go out and you give someone a job that's like, you know, 5 days of humping dirt or, you know, digging a pool out or,
right,
and they're like, oh, it's so expensive. But when an HVAC contractor or plumber comes, exactly, in or whatever, and they give their pricing, it's like, oh, it's, right, you know, it's a skilled trade, but,
right,
there's a lot of work that goes into landscape design building. There's a lot of things that go wrong. Right. You're dealing with grading plans. You're dealing with house elevations. You're dealing with all the trades. There's a lot of management that can go on.
Think about what a plumber pulls up in front of your house with, and an electrician and a landscaper. Yeah. They pull up with a van with maybe $50,000 worth of stuff in it. We pull up with $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000 worth of equipment in many, yeah, cases.
And it's, I'm not implying that people that come to this event or people listening to this podcast should price their way out of problems, but
your costs. Yeah.
Know your costs, right, and a rising tide lifts all boats. Right. So,
amen,
if we're all protecting our pricing, and we know we want our employees to have paid holidays, we want our employees to, right, have health insurance, we want our employees to have 401k. There's a certain standard that I think in the landscape industry we need to protect. And if you get yourself to the point with design build, especially, where you're like, this is the price that we need to do to make your expectations,
yeah, right,
and it you over deliver, it feeds the other hand, Marty. It feeds the referrals, it feeds, amen, everything. That's our number one thing.
Yeah, and I know from the pictures that I've seen of your job sites and the videos I've seen, those are tough people you're working for. And you know, we get in those situations here where someone says, "Well, so and so can do the exact same maintenance that you did for me last year for 30% less, I have to go with them." And I will say, "Hey, Charlie, I'm sorry, but there's no way it's the same job. It is all about the man hours. We're not wasting time over there. Either they don't know how to bid work, or they're not going to put the hours in it. And the quality of your home, your maintenance, it's going to erode slowly. You're not going to see it overnight."
Yep.
Okay, because we got it in good shape now. But come July, August, if you look at some before after pictures, you're going to start to see what happens from not having those hours spent on those beds.
You'll call me back in 3 years.
Right. Or having someone take a weed eater to your Hypericum ground cover versus having someone prune it. You know, yeah. I mean, it's what do you want? Do you really want to look good or not? So, you know, I think you're so true there about knowing your cost. And I also know, Keith, that I'm a lot older than you, but we're experienced gardeners and horticulturalists. My degree's in business, but I'm a very good horticulturalist, probably not as good as you, but I'm pretty good. I'm very confident. Like, I've done this a long time. I have no problem explaining myself or justifying my cost. You say protecting the cost, justify your cost,
exactly.
Knowing your cost, being able to go in there and know, look, I'm not ripping you off. I'm right here in the center. My company I'm working with is here. Your client is here. I got to sell you a job that makes the company money, but we also got to do a job that makes your place look incredible. That's what we're going to do.
Yeah, meet your expectations. I mean, you make a lot of great points. And, you know, sometimes it's one hand washes the other with, I always go back to that. But if our account managers sometimes like to get design build clients for their maintenance portfolio better than they do clients that just calling off the street, because they already know the value that they're going to get for the money. So there's not as much back and
forth. That's a great point. Price. That is. And they already have an experience with your men and your women and how they did. I never thought about it that way. That I'm going to add that to my repertoire. That's really good. Few more questions that just help, you know, things I was thinking about that I would want to know. 130 trucks coming out of the main branch. So that means a staggered rollout. You can't send all 130 to the gate. Can you tell me about how you do this and how it works, and give us a feel for the, you know, your bread and butter truck, your equipment? Most folks listening to the Grow Show Powered by Steel, they love learning that stuff, Keith.
So the staggered start started in COVID because we're trying to keep everybody separate. And then
I see
during that time, we had a crazy amount of growth. So it made sense. So if you're familiar with the Washington, D.C. area market,
I am.
You know, there's a lot of traffic.
Terrible. One of some of the worst in the country.
Yeah. So we start at 6:15 a.m. with our Northern Virginia guys that come out of Upper Marlboro. And, you know, they roll out. Then it comes in our D.C. and our Montgomery County crews. And it's all based on space. Like Emily saw our yard. It's 8 acres. It seems big, but there was no trucks in there.
No.
But when you're in there in the mornings, it's, you know,
it's
you
a
got
lot.
Inches in between trucks. So
right.
Plus we got, you know, in the spring rollout, you got mulch, you know, our yard's like a big circle. So those that attend the event will be able to see kind of method behind the madness there. And there's not always 130 trucks there every day. Some of the people are direct report, but you know, when the managers are there, there's a lot going on. So, and as you know, morning rollout, that first hour of the day is the most important time of the day. So
why?
Because especially with the traffic that we're dealing with, right? You got, you know, some of our guys are sitting in the truck for our guys and ladies are sitting in the truck for an hour and a half till they get there.
Terrible.
Every 15 minutes matters, right? You know, there's more people on the roads. People are going back to work now. I mean, that's an expectation for the client too. We don't want to be like some of these national brands that say, yeah, you know, your technician will be there between 9 and 1 p.m.
Right.
We want to give them a half hour when they're going to be.
Right.
And we would rather give our crew members a bonus at the end of the year than sucking up that morning rollout.
Yeah. Oh, and your comments on how important the rollout is, I mean, it's spot on. It's the efficiency. It's the time with the folks. It's where your culture is defined, where you can pick up on some safety items. You learn a lot. I mean, there's just so much from a morning rollout. And one of the things I've learned, Keith, I've personally visited over 200 landscaping companies to work with them on their businesses and or in our peer groups or whatever in the last 30 years. And I've come to understand and realize and believe that a smooth morning rollout is indicative of a very well-run company. Like, you don't practice a rollout. A smooth morning rollout means that everybody's working together, that procurement did a good job, that finance paid the bills, and we don't have to drive to 3 different vendors because we're on cash only at site one and we can't go there. And, you know, all these things that go into a well-run company. My friend retired as a manager from a very successful small chain of grocery stores here. It's Dorothy Lane Market. They've been ranked the number one independent grocer in the country several times in the last 30 years. And he said to me, we were over there to tour his place, and then he came over to see ours, and he said, gosh, he's like, I think I got it easier than you. And I said, well, why do you think you got it easier than me? He's like, well, when I manage the store here, he said, when I come in the morning, I can walk around, I can see everybody, I can literally look in all the freezers, basically get a real good handle on what's going on here in about 30 minutes of walking.
Yeah.
He's like, you can't do that with all your men and women here in the morning. You can, but you can't even make it around all the job sites. And he said, so I would think this like morning rollout for you is really important. And I got to tell you, Keith, I never looked at it that way until he said that. And I kind of had an epiphany, like, gosh, we got to really make sure that we are present for this rollout and that I need to be in here for sure. And I always have been, but I need to be in here saying hello and looking and reinforcing the positive that I see and making observations that I share with a manager, maybe something I saw I didn't like or something I saw that I did like. And so when you talk about a rollout, I just think there's so much to learn from watching that.
Oh, that just, we've all had those days where you show up and you meet a crew to do a job and they don't have a ladder or they don't have an extension pruner.
And where you're at, that's a big problem because it might be 2 or 3 hours before it gets there.
Yeah. Or you're going to buy one because it's cheaper to go buy one than it is to run back to the yard.
Right. Or,
you know, the worst is, you know, not having a skid steer or mini excavator. You know, we've kind of switched our, you know, we have a whole operations staff now too. And it's, we use the word operations different, but our operations team is kind of, we have a group of truck drivers since we have such bad traffic that if you need a skid steer, you need this or that, they're running it. They're running back and forth in the yards all day long just to kind of circumvent some of this. Because, you know, if you're a landscape company, you don't have issues with, you know, logistics every once in a while, you're doing something wrong. It's just, it's going to happen. Yeah. It's how you handle the problems that come up.
So in terms of equipment, give us some insight on your philosophy with that. Do you buy, you lease, you rent it? And then what are some of the bread and butter pieces that make your teams work easier?
Well, we run a mixture of Ford and Chevy, the 350s or 3500s. We have a Peterbilt roll-off that we use to deliver machinery. We have a tractor trailer that gets our plant material. We have some cab over Isuzus that are better for navigating the city. We use double axle cargo trailers for our mowing equipment because, you know, we've had issues with theft in the past, both in our yard and on the job, that we need to keep everything secure. Most of our skid steers and our mini excavators are Kubotas.
Okay.
We have some Bobcat dingoes that we run. And then 99% of our mowing equipment is either Exmark or Toro, and we've had really good success. Now, we did, Marty, probably from 2012 through 2018, we did lease mowing equipment.
Okay.
But we decided to go back.
And why did you go back?
A couple things, you know, depreciation on taxes.
Right.
But also those years, we kind of had some instability in our operation, in our mechanics staff. We were just understaffed. So we weren't turning mowers over enough then. So we just decided, you know, we'll force ourselves to do leasing. But, you know, that has, you know, we actually have a Mikhail who leads up our staff, Jake, and he's done a great job with it. So it makes more sense for us to buy now. Not to say that leasing is a bad option. It just at that point in time for us, it worked.
It's funny you say that because we just went through all that. We had to add, I think, 20 more mowers this year for our growth. And we looked at leasing and we ended up buying them. We just, the same thing. We just didn't see where it made sense. So,
So we run, most crews have a 1.0 turn, 148-inch, 136-inch walk behind and push mowers. But on our Eastern Shore branch, they're mowing huge estates. So
I got you.
The equipment's a lot bigger. And then it's, our philosophy on renting is, we have like one stump grinder, one chipper, you know, the basics, but we will rent equipment and we'll put it into the jobs. So we'll rent like Zoom booms, things like that. But I would say we're not going to buy it unless it's out on a job.
Yeah, right. Right. Exactly. You're very careful.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you have issues with theft. What are you doing to prevent that? And how are you setting your crews up for success in that area?
Unfortunately, we just have to be diligent, you know, when they're on the job site about there's just a band of guys going around just stealing stuff. So
unbelievable.
If the guys are working in the back of the house, they have to have everything locked up in, you know, in their trailer in the front. We put the hockey puck locks on. We're thinking about putting cameras in the trucks just to circumvent that issue. Yep. So it's just daily reminders, not daily, but monthly reminders to the crews like, hey, lock your stuff up. And this is extremely critical during COVID, where if you got a mower stolen, you weren't getting one for
a couple months. Good point.
In our yard, we have, our yard's under surveillance all the time. Both of our yards are under a lock and key, and everything is taken out of the trail, out of the trucks, and small stuff that can walk off is put into lockers that show everybody that comes to the event in September.
Yeah, boy, that's just tough. I know you mentioned a few more questions here with Keith Bowman from Mikhail, the host of our NALP field trip this year, excited to go there. You mentioned the folks that you have, the operations people. So in terms of logistics with materials and plants, are they delivered to the job site? Tell us a little bit about how you're handling some of that, because the pictures that I've seen, the amount of material that would have to go to some of these jobs is unbelievable.
Yeah, so some of those jobs, you know, we have a person named Mandy that's been with McHale as long as I can. She heads up our farm and our operation with plants. So the way it works is if I'm a salesperson, I go out and sell something, I get the deposit, I get a job number, I turn it into Mandy and I tell her, hey, I need this in the yard by the 15th. I'm taking it out on the 15th. It's got to come to the yard though, because we're in a tight spot in DC. Or if I sell, 30 Green Giant arborvitaes, I say, hey, let's bring them on the tractor trailer. So there are as much as possible as we can do with design build. We like to direct ship it to the job, so it's only touched once.
Yeah, and that's a lot better on that ball and burlap stuff, weakening the balls and everything, as you well know.
Yeah, and it helps our warranty numbers. And
yes, 100%.
It's also, it's mostly our maintenance enhancements are delivered to the yard and the crews take them out. But if we can get a 650 into a job, we're going to direct plant material deliver for our design build jobs. That goes with stone too, and gravel, river jack,
all that
stuff that we keep in the yard, mulch.
Yeah. I don't think there's statistics kept on this, Keith, but I can't imagine there's a more decorated company in the U.S. You folks have won hundreds of awards. It's unbelievable. I can't wait to learn some of the tricks. Are there any quick tricks you want to share with us about winning awards for your work?
Well, that's a great credit to Kev McHale. He's always pushed us and it's been a great marketing endeavor for us, but it's also, we kind of put ourselves out there. We put our work out there to be judged by other peers and getting involved in other associations. And that's a great compliment, Marty. I appreciate that. We take great pride in our work. So I would say the advice is, making money is important. Making money is important. But if you concentrate on metrics over the people and the product, it's probably not going to work out as well as if you do a bang up job and you go the extra mile, and maybe you have a job that the margins aren't as great as you'd hope. Find value in that mistakes that you made to have a lower margin, but give the best product you possibly can.
Yeah.
That's really the driving force behind McHale. We protect our brand through that. And we want to show off our work for younger companies out there. And there's a bunch in our market. We encourage everybody to submit there. We want to see everybody's work.
Well, and I love what you're saying there. And I found the awards are good all the way around. The clients love the fact that you got them. The team gets to pound on their chest. And to be honest with you, Keith, the group that I think gets the most benefit from it is the team that put the work in. We've won, I think, 60 awards total. When we get them, we'll get a plaque for the team leader and we'll make sure they get recognition. I think that it's, that's part of what drives us, that we're competitive. McHale wants to do award-winning work, and we want to win an award for it. We want to recognize, and then we want to talk about it. I think that's a great part of your culture that is something we all should probably look at implementing more in our own companies.
Yeah, it also helps keep employees too, because that motivates people. Those things motivate people.
Yeah, to feel good about their work and to feel recognized.
Yeah, you're working for a company that isn't just slapping trees in the ground and burying the root collar and going on to the next job.
Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to share about what everyone might see? Hopefully we'll get a lot of people that'll want to come see it. I know I can't wait to see it. We're bringing folks from our team here at Grunder. There's many of our clients are already signed up. Is there anything else that you want to share? And I'd also like to know, what are you struggling with? What are your challenges?
Well, that kind of parlays into my answer for your question is I think you're going to see an authentic company.
Okay.
We're going to celebrate our wins, and we do celebrate our wins, but we also have learned from our issues. We have issues just like any other landscape company does, and we're going to be excited to share and learn from people that are coming to see us. We have issues with inventory. We have issues with training sometimes with the last person on the crew, which is like, is the foreman training the third person on the crew or the fourth person on the crew? We're not a perfect company, but we strive for the best every day. And I'd like to think that attendees will be impressed and they're going to learn a lot from what we have to offer.
Well, I can't wait to come see you. It's going to be a blast. I'm going to be out there early. I'm going to stay late. I really appreciate the McHale brothers and the McHale family and yourself letting us come see you. It's not easy to have a few hundred people from all over the country rifling through your underwear drawers, as I say. but I think you're going to enjoy it. And I appreciate you putting yourself out there for us to learn from, because again, like I opened it up with, Keith, the experiential learning part of it, you know, it's one thing we could, I'm sure folks have enjoyed this podcast and they've learned a lot. We've showed them some pictures and some video, but when you get to see things, that's when the learning takes place. I know myself through the years and the companies I've toured, the things that you see, the schedule board ideas that you have, the ideas for equipment, the selling tactics, the way somebody held a meeting, the way they recognize an employee, a barbecue they did that had a certain twist on it. There's just the learning that can go on and the amplification you can do with those ideas, I think, is taken to another level. So I hope everyone will come join us for the NALP Grow Group field trip. Keith, can't wait to see it.
We're very excited, Marty. Thank you for doing this podcast, and thanks, Sarah, for having us.
No, of course. All right, folks. Well, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Grow Show Powered by Steel. Do us a favor. Why don't you take your cell phone out right now and share this episode with someone who you think would benefit from it. And by all means, sign up for the NALP Grow Group field trip. We'll see you there in Maryland in a couple months or so. Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Grow Show. A special thanks to the folks at Steel, whose support makes this podcast possible and whose outdoor power equipment makes our jobs easier every day. Remember to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and head to growgroupinc.com to learn more about our other offerings or to find more information to help your landscaping business. We'll talk to you next week.